Hey everybody, it's Tom Lounges back with another edition of Midwest Beat, and tonight we got a great show for you indeed. We're going to take acting, we're going to take writing, we're going to take rock and roll, we're going to take all kinds of things, mash them all up, and that is the world where Dinah Manhoff has been living her whole life. Dinah is, she's a stage actress, she's a film actress, she's a television actress, she sings, she dances. She is an author. That's right. She's a new novelist. She's a Tony Award-winning actress that has turned her talents to the computer keyboard and given us a great new book. A book called The Real, True Hollywood Story of Jackie Gold. All right. We'll talk to Dinah right after this, find out what's going on in her world and with this book. Good evening, everybody. I'm Tom Lounges, and tonight we're taking a little trip to Hollywood. That's right. We've got a book that's out now, a new novel, a fictional novel called The Real True Hollywood Story of Jackie Gold. It's courtesy of Star Alley Press, and the young lady that wrote it is Dinah Manhoff. Well, I met Dinah Manhoff as a teenage fan when she came into my living room one night. Yeah, it happened back in the late 70s. On a program called Soap. You see, I was a big fan of the late Richard Mulligan, and she played Elaine on Soap. You might remember that if you're of a certain age. Others might remember her for the 1980 movie Ordinary Life that took place right here in the Midwest with great talent like Robert Redford, Mary Tyler Moore, and many others. She's the only main character that was featured both on screen and on stage, in Neil Simon's I Ought to Be in Pictures. She played Libby Tucker. And Dinah actually won a Tony Award for that. So kudos to her for that. And of course, most of you remember her as Marty Marciano. Yeah, just like the cherry. She was the sassy and brassy member of the Pink Ladies gang in the film version of Grease. There's dozens of other films and television roles that she's known for, including that element that made her... that gave her street cred, you could say, with the nerdy Comic-Con crowd. She got herself brutally murdered by demonic doll Chucky in the 1988 horror classic Child's Play. Ouch, that had hurt. Anyway, we're here tonight to talk to her a little bit about some of those things, but mostly about her new role that she's taken on as novelist. As I mentioned, there's a great new novel out on the bookshelves now called The Real True Story of Jackie Gold. By Star Alley Press. It just landed there, just in time for holiday gift giving, you might say. All right, let's take a time now to fade that music out as Hollywood swings away and we swing into some dialogue with Dinah Manhoff. How are you, Diana?
Well, I'm just fine. What an introduction. Thank you so much.
There are so many laurels upon which you could rest, and I just capsulated a few of my favorites from your career, which I have followed for a while now, and it's been amazing. So, with all these accolades, with all these accomplishments, why take on the mantle of novelist author at this point in your life?
Well, I think that it shows me. I didn't really set out to be a novelist. I was in a period of my life where I was working and I had just had a newborn, and it was at the time that Princess Diana had been killed by the paparazzi, followed into that tunnel by them, and at that time this guy from the Inquirer, a paparazzi, showed up at my front door, banging on my door, to ask me some pretty private questions about my life. And I just went ballistic on him and chased him off my property. And I had all this kind of anger about, you know, how invasive these guys were. And remember, this is before cell phones. This is before, you know, TMZ. It's before, you know, Instagram. And these guys were the guys that spread all the dirt.
Right.
And I started to, you know, jot down my anger about it. And it, you know, lo and behold, many years later, it turned into a novel.
Wow. I was going to say, that's a long time in the works. So how often did you work on this? I thought you might have been working the past year during the whole COVID shutdown, probably
well,
to fine-tune it.
Yes, absolutely. Well, my final draft came during COVID, for sure. But this was a project that, you know, really was just something I was tinkering with in the very beginning. That was the seed of it. And then, you know, I had three children and decided that, you know, I could either be a really, you know, distant mother locked away in my office writing, or I could put the book away and I could, you know, focus on parenting. And so, you know, so I went back to it and left it and back to it and left it. And then, you know, finally, 2 years ago, I brought it out again. And I thought, you know, I'm really going to give this a shot now. And I sent it out to some independent publishers. And I was lucky enough to be published by Star Alley.
Mm-hmm. So this book, how much of it is drawn from your experiences outside of the paparazzi at your door moment?
Well, you know, Jackie Gold is not me.
Right.
But she certainly has had some of my experiences. Jackie Gold is a big, big superstar who's been raised in show business. Her father is the head of a major motion picture studio. Her boyfriend is People's Sexiest Man Alive.
Mm-hmm.
And she tells her life story from the hospital bed where she's lying in a coma after jumping off a balcony to escape the paparazzi. That's the setup. And, you know, it's in turns funny and it's in turns serious. And, you know, some of my childhood has leached into Jackie's childhood. Certainly, I grew up in Malibu.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother is an actress, Lee Grant.
Right.
And so I had a lot of experiences to draw from. But Jackie's life, her story is very different from mine.
Is it like an amalgamation of people you've met and known?
I suppose in some ways it is, but, you know, I'm not a person who's like, you know, hiding a famous boyfriend I dated behind, you know, another character behind a fictional bad boyfriend. Although there are a couple of lines that, you know, that some of Jackie's bad boyfriends say that some of my bad boyfriends said. But no, this is really a journey about what Price thinks. And you know, the book actually took me into examining, you know, what is this craving for attention that we performers have, and what do we deserve for that? Do we deserve to be hounded? Do we deserve to be, you know, written about or disparaged? You know, what's our bargain in it? And
mm-hmm.
I think that's what Jackie's journey is.
Well, you know, if you study history and you go back to the medieval days, the actors of Shakespeare's era, the jesters, the entertainers, those that would play the lute, they were the lower level citizens. They were disdained by the general public. And somehow that all flipped around and we put you guys all on pedestals. And now we're all chasing fame and stardom, and it does come with a price. And I'm still trying to wrap my head around when that happened, when we decided to put actors in this role, just like sports figures, you know, the certain people that are in the limelight, and you wonder, why are they so special? And why does the paparazzi care?
You know, I think that with royalty, you know, there's always been that kind of, you know, wanting to talk about, wanting to gossip about, wanting to write about, and envy and jealousy. And I just think that, you know, performers became the new royalty,
mm-hmm.
you know, from the first time, a gossip columnist, you know, probably sometime back in the 20s, whenever the first talkies started,
mm-hmm.
you know, and a gossip columnist got a hold of, you know, a piece of paper and started writing.
Right. Someone like a Hedda Hopper out there that
yeah,
kind of got the ball
exactly.
rolling. You know,
even the
early talkies, even the old silent films, the Charlie Chaplins and people like that, Roscoe Brown, they all had their dues to pay, so to speak, for the fame and fortune that they had.
Yeah.
And it's interesting.
And look at, you know, you look at Britney Spears now, the documentary that was done on Britney.
Right.
And, you know, that's very much the tale of Jackie. That's really what we're talking about, is somebody who is hounded to a damaging degree, and they're still doing it, you know. So
yes,
anyway.
It's like they just can't leave people alone to have their peace. And you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, you signed up for that when you wanted to get famous, and you know, yeah, that's really not true. We see all these different people that are very successful in their jobs, and they don't ask for that. They want to go home. And we see a lot of artists like Mark Harmon, who you have co-starred with. Mark is one of those folks that has a beautiful family life. He's super famous, sexiest man in the world at some points, but he goes home. He doesn't wander and wallow in that stardom. He doesn't go to the red carpet events, things like that. So I think that that you can have that balance.
And he is a lovely guy. I also agree.
Yeah, he is, definitely.
And very sexy. I have. Oh, let's move on.
Okay, we won't get into that. It's interesting because this book, The Real True Hollywood Story of Jackie Gold, which is a fictional piece. I do want to remind the listeners, it's a fictional piece, and it's available through Star Alley Press. You can get it through through their website. Just put a .com on there, I believe, and you
or
can find it.
Or through Amazon.
Or through Amazon.
My website, dynamanos.org.
The opening pages, you dedicate this to mom, just simply mom. And as you mentioned a minute ago, your mom is Lee Grant, an amazing actress who I had the wonderful fortune of interviewing on the set, or on the press junket, I should say, of the movie Teachers. It was based in a Midwest school, and she played a doctor, and of course Richard was in there. Richard Mulligan, who you had starred with, he was the crazy guy that became a substitute, and Nick Nolte was there, and Judd Hirsch, and Ralph Macchio, and I remember sitting down for 2 days. We did these round robin tables, and I was covering it for some different teen magazines, mostly because Ralph was in it. But your mom struck me as being one of the most elegant people. She was so polite, so professional compared to a couple of the other members of the cast. Who will go nameless.
I know who you're talking about.
There you go. But she was so poised and so classy. And, I mean, to me, that was the closest I think I got ever to any of the old Hollywood people. And she grew up in the Hollywood business. I mean, she was a very young actress when she got started. Your dad was a playwright. They came up at a rough time in Hollywood. How much did you learn from mom, because you dedicated the book to her, so clearly there was a lot of mom input in the things you've done.
Well, yes. I mean, you know, my mother has alternately been my nemesis and my hero throughout my life. You know, when I was a teenager, the last person I wanted to be like was my mother, and now she's the person that I would want to be like more than anybody. She's, you know, 96 years old, the classiest, coolest, smartest, most beautiful lady. She takes the bus to Pilates once a week. You know, she's engaged. She's, you know, throwing dinner parties. And
good
she's,
for her.
She's incredible. I mean, she really is an incredible woman. And over the years, you know, we have grown, I don't want to say grown closer because we've always been close, but we've grown friendlier, I would say. I mean, okay. We really admire each other in a way, you know, that's different from that, you know, where the mother-daughter buttons are getting pushed.
Right.
I had the treat of directing her in a reading here where I live near Seattle a few years ago. And, you know, I mean, we've just had so many great experiences together. But as an actress, you know, I think one of the reasons that I got that Neil Simon play that you mentioned that I won a Tony for was because from the time I could read, I was cueing my mother on script and often Neil Simon material. So I kind of had a built-in timing, you know, that she had handed down to me that came in really handy.
Now, the book has been out just relatively new. It's just a couple of weeks, is that correct?
It's summer.
Since summer.
Summer.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's been long enough to get a few legs on it then. What's the response been? I've seen some of the quotes. You've got great quotes from some of your peers in the film and television business. Jamie Curtis and just on and on have just said wonderful things about it. Obviously, they've all experienced a little bit of that paparazzi insanity. But what has the general public response been? Have you got anything back from the publisher yet as far as feedback?
Well, the feedback that I'm getting are usually from the people I know or people who know people I know and who have made an effort to get in touch with me and tell me, you know, what parts they thought were so funny and what parts moved them. And, you know, the story of Jackie Gold, much of it has to do with a relationship with her mother, which is very, very unlike the relationship I had with my mother.
Okay.
Jackie's mother is an alcoholic who abandons her at a very young age, and that was certainly not my experience. So the feedback I'm getting from many people is they're relating to the story of Jackie's relationship with her mother and the journey that that takes. And, you know, finally getting feedback on a book that I worked on for, you know, many years is that's the dessert. I mean, that's finally getting my cake, you know, to have people share with me, you know, what their reactions were to the work and to, you know,
because
having an audience.
Are you doing any book signings and things? I know COVID has kind of relinquished a little bit and people are back on the road doing things, but I'm not sure where you're at because there are still those hot spots. Are you out there promoting the book actively?
Well, I have done some, you know, near where I live in the Northwest, and I have one that I'm doing up here in Bellingham in a couple of weeks. But as far as across the rest of the country, everybody that I've spoken to is still shut down as far as live readings go, because most of the bookstores are little places,
right,
you know, where you're kind of crammed in. And where we did our book launch here, we did it outside, but it was during, you know, late summer, so that we were able to take advantage of the weather.
Mm-hmm.
But now it would be very hard to do that. So I'm talking to a lot of people like you,
okay,
and, you know, hoping that the book finds its broad audience, because I think it's a lot of fun and I think it's a really good adventure.
It's just under 400 pages, and so it's a quick read. I mean, it's not something you're going to labor over. It's not War and Peace, but
God forbid.
So it's a quick read. How many re-edits? I mean, because you grew up with this book, as you mentioned, several years, and we all change and we all develop and we all mature in so many ways. How many rewrites did you do? And at some point, did you ever think, the heck with this? I've put too many years into it. I'm done.
Yes. Like 10 times I thought that. Yeah. And it just kept coming out and hitting me on the head. You know, it wouldn't leave me alone. And I'm so glad now, you know, I mean, it was a big effort and it was a real risk of a lot of rejection to send it out, you know, and I certainly got my share of rejection letters. But now that it's out and people seem to love it and, you know, I'm having such a good time talking about it. Now I'm just really glad that I went the extra mile and, you know, and pushed to get it out there.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's out. Has Mom read it? Obviously, she knows it was dedicated to her, but has she actually read it?
My mother is my biggest fan. We did a Queen's Library interview together about 3 weeks ago.
Wow.
And everybody texted me, you should see your mother's face when you're reading from the book. She's like, my mother is really, you know, the ultimate doting Jewish mother. She's my biggest fan, and she's crazy for this book. Maybe a little too crazy.
Well, she's a writer herself. She's done screenwriting, directing.
Is.
She's got books out. Was there any point where Mom was giving that sage advice and saying, Dinah, this is how you should do this?
No. My mother's not a fiction writer. My mother wrote a wonderful memoir, which, you know, but I'll say this. She really set an example for me, because my mother in her mid-80s sat down with a stack of yellow legal pads and a pen and wrote her memoir in her mid-80s, you know, without a computer, without, and just did it and stuck to it. And I kept thinking, oh my God, she's never going to get through this. She's never going to be able to, you know, edit this. And she did it. And it was just an amazing example for me. You know, in terms of that kind of tenacity and belief. And so, you know, I just admire her so much.
Now that it's out of your system, all these years have passed, you've purged yourself of this this angst that you had at this paparazzi gentleman that came to your door, and you've moved on, you've gotten great response. What's the next step as a writer?
Well, I just want to say that was only a little of my angst.
Oh, okay.
I have way more angst to expel and explore. My God, you know, if that was my only angst, I'd be, you know, sitting pretty. I have something else I'm working on right now, you know, but right this moment, I have soup on the stove and laundry in the washing machine and, you know, and my kids home from college. And, you know, I'm enjoying this time with getting to see my boys who are both home for the week. That's what I'm working on.
You had mentioned in the beginning that you know, obviously family is extremely important to you and you took a lot of time. You did stop acting for quite some time. I mean, you came back and reprised your Chucky role a couple of years ago.
No, not me. No.
No?
No, I haven't acted in many, many, many years. No, no. And I'm dead as far as Chucky knows.
Well, I know he took a hammer to your head. That was pretty brutal.
He definitely. I am Chucky's first victim, and I have stayed dead. Yeah, I have not come. Well, I have not been reborn.
I thought there was some kind of documentary you were part of, Cult of Chucky or something to that effect. Maybe they used the archive footage then. But
they must have. Wasn't me.
The last thing I think you did was some Christmas movies for Hallmark or something similar like that. But it's been a long, long time.
Yeah, that's the worst movie ever made. Please don't ever watch that.
Okay,
movie.
I promise I won't. what's next for you as far as acting? Your kids are grown. Your book is out. Obviously, the laundry can wait. What's your goal? Are you done with being in front of the camera? I know you've also directed a little bit too. Is that more where your favor lies?
You know, what's given me the most joy in my life besides raising my children on their good days. I started teaching acting, 15, 16 years ago, which I really love. And I started teaching about 5 years ago at a women's prison. And with another friend of mine, she and I would go in and do improv and acting with the women in there. And I tell you, I had more rewards from going in as a teacher into the institution and working with these women than I've ever had doing anything else creatively, except maybe writing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I have no desire to be in front of camera at this point because it makes me nervous. You know, I don't want to be nervous anymore or worry about how I look or, you know, obsess over, you know, the wrinkles. And it's too hard. And there are so many other ways that I have found and can find to express myself creatively. I don't think I'll be in front of the camera anytime soon.
Okay. With the prison work, do they allow you to actually put little productions on in the prison?
Well, there is a group that does that. That's
okay.
Not what I do. I was part of their high school 21 program, which was a program for women who had never gotten their high school degrees, and uh-huh. I was their drama class. So what I got to do was to go in and basically do whatever I wanted with them. And we would laugh so hard doing improv together that the guards would come down to make sure everybody was okay. It was a great joy. I have not been able to go back since COVID. I'm still waiting for them to open back up again so that the volunteer teachers can come back in.
Now, have you had any of your students that have earned their freedom go out and actually pursue a showbiz career or any kind of entertainment career, taking a little nugget of something you've passed on to them and better their lives with it?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Well, I ask because teachers have a big impact.
We're not allowed to keep in touch with anybody in the correctional institute.
That's
so
too bad.
The time that we're in there is the only contact that we have. But I have had a couple of students go on to, you know, have quite good acting careers. However, they weren't in prison first.
Okay.
That I know of.
All right. Well, it's interesting because teachers can have such a huge impact on things, especially with the young folks. And I mean, I'm a living example of that. One of my high school teachers turned me from a ne'er-do-well, kind of guy that would have fit in right with the Grease crowd. And, here I am doing radio in my 60s, and because one teacher actually took time to care. and that you said, you know, that this is such an important thing to you impresses me, because you've got that same kind of, obviously, mojo or DNA that he had to be able to recognize how important that is to people that don't have that.
Well, I like that you term yourself a former ne'er-do-well, and I too was a ne'er-do-well, although I like to think I was more of a juvenile delinquent, you know, through my teenage years.
Okay.
But I think that part of the reason I loved going in to be with the women and work with them in improv and acting was because truly I felt that there before the grace of God go I.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt that it could just as easily have been me had I been born into a different situation, because I certainly did a lot of things that I could have been incarcerated for in my early years. And I relate a lot to the women who are struggling to work their way through alcoholism and addiction.
Mm-hmm.
and better themselves. But mostly what I wanted to bring to them in class was a place for them to feel free. And if you can create that in that setting, then that was a gift for both of us. And, you know, quite honestly, at the time that I went in to teach there, I had just lost a child. My 19-year-old son, Dashiell, had died in a car accident. And I took myself to that prison to teach in order to survive. And because I didn't feel that I could be of service or of help to anybody but people who were suffering more than I was.
Right.
And I feel like they saved me. You know, it was the one place during the week that I felt free and that where I could laugh. And, you know, that's the truth about that.
Wow, that's very moving. And I hope they open up the doors again soon so that you can go back and keep making that impact for both yourself and for them.
Me too. I hope so too.
One of the things that we haven't really touched on, and that is, you've done television, you've done film, but we didn't touch on the fact that you won a Tony. I mean, you are a stage actress, and in my opinion, I mean, I've dabbled with a little bit of on-screen things and talk shows and things like that, and you can always go back and do the retakes and the overs and the edits, but when you're on stage, you are stripped naked, and it's your soul, and you can't screw up. Or if you do, you got to know how to cover it. I have so much respect for stage actresses, more so than anything else. And let's talk about the fact that you were both in the screen and stage version of I Ought to Be in Pictures, which, of course, is a classic from Neil Simon. You won a Tony for Best Featured Actress. What was that like? And how much did that make you want to go out and do more stage? And are you still going to do stage?
No.
Okay.
I'm not going to do stage either. You know, at that time, that was my first play, and I really learned to be a stage actress through the director, Herb Ross, at the time. He really gave me the discipline and the grounding and the craft, because I really came in kind of, you know, I just kind of came in from the beach, you know, from my life. You know, being a lucky actress who was getting some roles, and then I landed this big, big, big role.
Mm-hmm.
And it was scary. And what I found once I got my sea legs under me was that I loved being on stage. I loved it. I felt at home on stage far, far more than I've ever felt in front of camera. Although doing Empty Nest, doing a sitcom, is like doing a little play. I was very comfortable doing Empty Nest. Not so comfortable doing movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that the screen adaptation of I Ought to Be in Pictures, for me, I never felt like I brought that stage performance that I had found to the screen. I was way self-conscious, way too self-conscious, way too nervous. Way too self-focused and not free in front of the camera. So I can't watch it. I can't watch that movie.
Is it okay if we watch it? We won't watch your Christmas movie, I promise. But
oh God, don't watch. It's true that I am a little hard on myself, but but yeah, you can watch it. But
know that
I don't give it my stamp of approval. There are performances that you know that I'm more proud of than that, and I wish I had a do over. You know, I still dream about having a do over in that part.
Well, as Warren Zevon once said, you're not dead yet, so get out there and do what you want to do.
I'm a little old for that role. Now,
you're never too old. You're never too old. Look at your mom. She'll tell you that. Yeah. I'm going to play a little clip here, about 2.5 minutes of something. We're talking about your wonderful stage acting. And this is something that was a lot of fun to watch. I had a chance to see it. Well, you'll recognize it. This is actually you performing on television when you were nominated. So let's play this little clip from an amazing live performance called Leader of the Pack, 1984.
The third nominee for Best Musical is called Leader of the Pack. And hearing that, most of you will know that it's a story written around the old Ellie Greenwich, Jeff Berry songs of the 60s. You remember this one? Leader of the Pack with Dinah Manoff and Patrick Cassidy.
Come on, girls, let's show these boys how to have a party.
Leader of the Pack, 1984. It was a jukebox musical. My guest tonight, taking her back in a time warp here. Dinah Manoff was the singer you heard there, doing some shimmying and some twisting and all kinds of fun stuff. I got to tell you, you gave a lot of pleasure to a lot of people that grew up with that music in that performance, just like you did in Grease as one of the Pink Ladies. You're never too old to rock and roll. You know that. You got to get back and do this again. You got to.
Well, that, yes, maybe that I can do again. I'm actually sitting here in my bedroom talking to, blushing from listening to that clip you just played.
Oh
my gosh, I was so terrified. They had to push me on stage.
You didn't look
at dancing live at the Tonys.
No.
Oh, I was terrified.
But you were fresh from that 60s kind of groove and 50s groove because you had done Grease. Yeah. The film came out. You were one. I put it in the promo, and I don't mean to make you blush further. You were one of the hottest pink ladies out there, and Jose agreed with me, snapping at bubble gum, picking up pennies. We're going like, yeah, she was the cute one of the group, you know? Nothing against Pinky and the rest of them, but you were the one that us teenage boys were all watching saying, man, she's cool.
Oh, thank you. We'll see. That makes my day.
How much response? I mean, you've won a Tony, but I got to think that everybody remembers you as Marty Maraschino from Grease. That's got to be the thing that people know you best from.
Well, you know, it's amazing to me how Grease has lasted and even built up steam and popularity over the years. Because when it first came out, frankly, you know, I thought it was going to come and go. Mm-hmm. The reviews were lukewarm. You know, people were saying, oh, it's not like the play, it's too campy. And over the years, it has just built up such a huge following. And now, like on Halloween, I open my door and there's like a gaggle of pink ladies singing Summer Nights to me. It's so dear. You know, my boys have all, you know, told the girls they liked that I was in Grease and played Marty so that they could get dates. You know, I say use it if you need to, guys.
That's right. Go
no,
for it.
It really is amazing. I mean, I still get a lot of fan mail, and I go out sometimes with my fellow pink ladies and T-Birds, and we do some, you know, some autograph signings. We're actually going to Liverpool in May for the first time to
really?
Do a Comic-Con there. Yep.
See, in the beginning, I said that you have a cult status with the Comic-Con nerd group out there.
Yeah.
Love
I
that.
Do.
You know, you can make a living on that the rest of your life.
Well, I don't know about that. It doesn't pay all that much, but it is kind of fun going out and finding those Chucky dolls, I have to say.
Right. Chucky is scared the heck out of my daughter. She's still at 36, will not watch it because of that.
Uh-huh.
What made you go in from musicals and fun and lovable teenagers to being, you know, silver hammered by Maxwell over there with Chucky?
Well, first, I want you to tell your daughter that I also haven't watched Child's Play. I have watched it up until when I die. And then I turned it off because scary movies are too scary for me. And that doll was really, really scary. So I've never seen the whole movie of Child's Play. And the reason I did that movie, well, I was auditioning in New York for lots of different stuff. And I had just gotten a role in a film called The Bloodhounds of Broadway, which starred Madonna and Jennifer Grey and Randy Quaid when he was sane and Matt Dillon. And it was like this big, big, you know, prestigious project,
mm-hmm.
but it paid nothing. It paid nothing. And then I had this other audition for this horror film called Child's Play, and which paid real money. And I thought, well, you know, no one's going to see the horror film and everybody's going to see the other film. So I'm going to take the horror film to pay for my being able to do the other film. And of course, Bloodhounds of Broadway went straight to cable, if that. Nobody saw Bloodhounds of Broadway, and Chucky was number one at the box office. So that goes to show you how much I know.
Wow. So you never saw the whole finished version, right? Just the scene
No, I never have. It's too scary for me.
That had to be a little traumatizing if your sons watched it growing up and say, oh my God, Mom's going to eat the hammer here.
My sons have all watched it.
Okay.
And they have all told me they've been traumatized, yes.
Let's jump back to the book. We're here to talk about your book. Again, the real Hollywood story of Jackie Gold. That is a real mouthful to say. It's a novel. It's a fictional piece, a little under 400 words. And one of the things I like about it is you captivated me from the beginning. And again, I haven't read the whole thing because I just got a digital version. And I've had time to kind of peruse a little. But you start off with telling that you were born or Jackie was born when Mia Farrow and Frank Sinatra were going through the divorce. So right there in that first paragraph, those first few lines, that was a huge paparazzi moment. So it's almost like from birth she was cursed to be pursued by the paparazzi. Was that the intent when you wrote this?
Yeah, I really wanted to set the stage of that time, you know, of how she grew up and what the fever was of the paparazzi then, you know, when Mia Farrow was the focus. My mother had stuff, you know, written about her constantly, but it was all kind of harmless at that point. You know, it all seemed harmless until it became harmful and scary. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, that was that turn when Princess Diana died and everybody went, oh my God, these guys really are dangerous. You know, up until then, you know, there were lawsuits and this and that. And, you know, there were people who, you know, the paparazzi would unearth, you know, adoptees and children from out of wedlock. And, you know, but it was all gossip. It wasn't like life or death until it was life or death.
Right.
But if it's all right with you, I would just like to read what the quote Jamie Lee Curtis gave me on the cover of my book, which I really love, and I'm really grateful to her for it. She said, the real true Hollywood story of Jackie Gold is a brilliant rewinding of a life of Hollywood grit, gluttony, and nose job.
Wow.
I like that.
As only Jamie could say it.
Right. And I like that because she understood that this is a funny book. Even though it deals with some very serious issues, it's a very funny book. And I'm actually going in to record the Audible version in January. And I can't wait because I really want to be able to kind of play all the characters I've written. I mean, you ask me if I'm going back to acting and I say no. And then I think, well, yeah, kind of in a way I am because I get to voice all these, you know, these crazy people that I've, you know, invented.
Right. So how much of the characters, who are your favorite characters in this, I should say? I mean, it is funny. It is serious. It is horrific at times when, you know, she's jumping off the bridge and things like that. But of the characters in there, usually an author has a favorite one or two that they, you know, that will go into the next book and carry on, you know, whatever. But who was the characters you most related to and felt empathy for?
My favorite character is her mother. She is the most fragile and the most damaged character in the book. And I felt such love for her while I was writing her. I felt like I really knew this person, even though I didn't know that she isn't based on anybody real. I think she was just a person I felt I needed to explore. Or I knew women like her, but she was my favorite character to write. And I don't know, Jackie's boyfriend, Brett, he was the most challenging character to write because I didn't want him to be one dimensional. You know, I didn't want him to just be this people's sexiest man alive, you know, cowboy guy, you know, so I had to dig pretty deep to get, give him character in his true nature and not just make him a stereotype, you know?
Yeah, he could have easily come off as like a Fabio kind of guy. You know, it's like, okay, he's this gorgeous bronze god that the women are going to flock to, but you had to give him some substance. And
I liked working. One of the things I loved writing about for Jackie and for Brett, for boyfriend, was really working with all the acting insecurities. You know, male actors, okay, this is a sweeping general statement.
Okay,
but in my experience, having dated many male actors, they are far more vain and insecure than we are. I mean, we're vain and insecure, but they are, you know, boy, they take the cake. So I have to say I did, you know, put in a little of some of the conversations I'd had with some former boyfriends into Brett's character.
Okay. One of the things that that I find interesting, and that is the fact your dad was a playwright, your mom is a famous actress, writer, director. You've done that. Your brother is a producer and critic on our very own NPR, All Things Considered, actually previews my show. So you come from a showbiz family with irons in every possible fire, from writing to radio to television to film. Are your children carrying on that DNA tradition. It's in the blood. It's in the family DNA. What are they doing as far as to be like mom or grandma or grandfather or uncle?
Yeah, good question. Well, one of my sons is studying voiceover acting because he's a big anime buff.
Okay.
And his kind of life dream, at least, you know, as young as he is, only 19, but his life dream right now is to voice anime. He wants to move to Japan and play every American in all the anime that they produce in Japan. So he's taking some voice lessons.
Okay.
My other son has no, I don't see any proclivity toward acting or show business in any way, shape, or form. He's, you know, studying environmental design, sustainable design.
Okay, so he's out to save the earth and save the world so that the rest of the family can continue.
God willing, yeah. God
All
willing.
Right. It's interesting because I am very foreign to the whole anime thing, and Jose, who you talked to in the beginning of the show, is very much into the Japanese culture and the anime and the things, and he actually does a program here about, what is it called, Jose? The Region Nerd Alert. Okay, Region Nerd Alert. So, I mean, he may have to interview your son one day just because of the fact that it's right up his alley and down his street, so to speak. It's a young guy's thing,
that.
I guess. I don't know. I can't wrap my head around. I'm still into Hanna-Barbera, you know, if I have to get a cartoon fix. But we have had an amazing conversation. What have we not talked about? I mean, I know there's got to be things you want to talk about with the book. Anything. I've kind of dominated the conversation about my fanboy coming out with some of the things that I just loved in your career. What have we not talked about people should know?
Gosh, that's a really hard question. I'm all stumped. I'm stuttering and everything. What have we talked about? What have we not talked about? Gosh, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't have anything. I feel like we covered so many subjects, and I've enjoyed it so much. I mean, it's
Thank
been,
you.
You know, you asked really, really interesting, deep, good questions, and I like that you're a fanboy. So
all
it
right.
worked for me.
There
Tom.
You
it,
go.
It all worked for me.
Well, let me close with this, and that is, as I mentioned, when I met your mom, and we did the round robin kind of press junkets here in Chicagoland. On teachers, she left me with such an impression that all these years later, I still think of her incredibly fondly as one of the greats. What piece of knowledge, what nuggets, tidbits, advice did she pass on to you that perhaps you can pass on to young listeners today?
Well, I don't think her biggest piece of advice is not appropriate for young listeners.
Okay.
I can't say that. But I will say that, you know, that my mother was never about becoming a big star. She was always about making a living. And I was really fortunate to grow up in a very matriarchal household. You know, my parents divorced when I was very young. And my mother was the breadwinner growing up, you know, until my stepfather came along. And you know, she set a great example of a working woman for me at a time when none of my friends' mothers were going out to work. So, you know, I think she was a pioneer in so many ways. She mm-hmm. was a director, you know, one of the very first women directors in Hollywood. You know, she fought very hard. She fought through the blacklist to work again.
Right.
Both she and my father were blacklisted. And so, you know, she's a warrior, my mother. She puts up a good fight. She really does. And she really fights for what she believes in, you know, for good cause.
Strong lady.
Yes, she is.
And for the listeners that may not remember, the blacklist was all part of that Joe McCarthy era thing where so many
yes.
amazing talents were banned from working. And, you know, it was such a shame. And your mom's career was just starting. And I read a couple of interesting books. And I cannot remember who the veteran actor was. He was a senior veteran actor in those days. And he spoke so highly. He said, this poor girl has such beautiful talent in front of her, and yet she's not allowed to work. And he goes, that is
10 years. She was blacklisted for 10
yep.
years.
Yeah. And but yep. she sure came out swinging when she got back in front of the camera. So
yeah, she did, Tom.
Your role at this point, no intention of doing anything in front of the camera, not going back to the stage. You are going to hopefully continue teaching, and you are already putting pieces together for a follow-up book. Am I on the same page?
Yes, and I'm going to be recording the Audible version of this book. But in the meantime, you can order Jackie Gold at Amazon, or if you prefer to support your local bookstore, which I always prefer to do, just go in and ask them to order you a copy of The Real True Hollywood Story of Jackie Gold, and they will get it in for you.
All right. Will the next book be a novel, a fictional piece? Will it be something
yes.
of a memoir? What will it be?
I can't write a memoir until everyone's dead. There's just no way.
Oh, because, yeah. You'll wind up in a trunk because you know where the bodies are buried. I know that
feeling. Yeah, no. That's probably never going to happen. But it'll all just be channeled. All my angst will channel into fiction from here on in.
All right. Will it be another story of Hollywood?
No.
Okay.
No. This was my Hollywood novel. But, you know, now I've been living, you know, on an island near Seattle for the last 16 years. I have to write about real people now.
Okay. Well, I hope when that next book comes out, we'll be able to revisit and talk about it.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. It's my first NPR interview ever.
Really? I beat your brother?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm sure he'll have you on, all things considered. And Jose actually engineers that as well. Let's do. Let's close out with a song that you had mentioned earlier that the kids sing and dance at Halloween. Let's go back to the Grease soundtrack and leave this on an upbeat. Listeners, you can sing along if you're so inclined. Just remember, if you're driving and listening, keep your hands on the wheel. And Dinah, you can sing along too in your bedroom there.
Oh, that's okay. I think I'll just listen too.
All right. She's the one that you want because she knows the real true Hollywood story behind Jackie Gold. And you can too by picking it up. Her website, dinamanoff.org, and you can get it at your local bookstore. There you go. And watch for the audio version soon to come to a podcast somewhere in this universe. Dinah, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Be safe and have a great Thanksgiving.
You too.
Please give my best to your mom and let her know how much of an impact she made on me.
I will. I sure will.
She's a beautiful woman.
I'm gonna call her tonight and tell her.
Yeah, all right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Turn it up, Jose.